My name's Christian. I work at Facebook. I work on release engineering with Chuck Rossi. If you've ever met him, I think he talked at the last Rel and stuff. So I'm going to talk about the pain of mobile release engineering at scale. If you're not interested in mobile, if you do more back-end stuff, it's kind of interesting to hear the differences, the pain. Hopefully you'll never feel it, but the whole world is moving to mobile, so it'll probably crash land in your world soon if it hasn't already. Context about me, Facebook, I've been there 3 years now, doing mobile releases as well as web. And before that, I was at Mozilla doing Firefox releases. And before that, I was at Apple doing Mac OS X releases. So I've kind of been around and seen different layers of the stack. So I want to talk to you a little bit about scale, because that was at the end, is the pain of mobile, but also at scale. Facebook scale on mobile, pretty huge. We have a billion monthly active users, 703 million daily active users. Those numbers are insane, and except to our Google folks. Those numbers are insane and kind of hard to reason about. So I have this good quote from Sheryl. She said it at like an old conference call. And she said, Facebook accounts for more mobile minutes in the US than YouTube, Pandora, Yahoo, Twitter, Pinterest, Tumblr, AOL, Snapchat, and LinkedIn combined. So it's a pretty big deal, and that's kind of what we mean by our scale and impact. And so we have our apps, and they ship on iPads and iPhones, native and web, support iOS 7 and higher. We just dropped iOS 6. And on Android, we're Gingerbread and higher. Again, if you don't know mobile, Gingerbreads basically came out in 2010, I want to say, so it's 4 years old. Our apps are native Android code as well as web views, and when we ship, there's not just one version on Android of Facebook for Android. There are 15 packages we ship every time because Google Play lets you go, oh, you have an MDPI phone. It doesn't have that great of a screen. There's no reason why you need to download a package with big tablet resources that takes up just space on your disk. So you get to, and this requires more release engineering work to actually do this for a better experience. So we do that. So it's pretty complicated. In addition to the main app, we have lots of other apps that have millions of users, and they are shipping at different schedules. Some have shared code, some don't. Some have Facebook login, some do not. We have over 10 apps, actually. And that's actually not super huge. There's a lot of other companies out there that have a lot more apps. But as far as number of apps and impact and scale, we think we're pretty high up there. Our mobile repositories have over 100,000 commits. And we have over 150,000 files in our mobile Android and iOS. We do vendor in our dependencies, so that's not just our app code. But I worked on an operating system and a browser, and I think these apps are in the same order of magnitude of complexity as those two, which is kind of unreal when you say it out loud, but I've been in and I've felt it. And then over all that, we ship our mobile apps every 2 weeks. Not all of them ship every 2 weeks, but this is basically our target. We want to get to 1 week, but right now we're at 2 weeks. And this is really slow if you're used to continuous deployment, back-end stuff. You know, you really want, the test pass, ship it out. This is lightning fast for mobile. And maybe not lightning fast for a mobile company, some guy in his basement building something, but this is lightning fast for someone with that impact I was talking about. So we're pretty proud of this, and because of this, we hit a lot of pain. So why do you care that on mobile, Facebook has big scale, number one, and it hits a bunch of pain because of its scale, number two? Because we are the canary in the coal mine. Chances are we are hitting pain before you know it even exists. And if we solve it, there might be waterfall effects of we might solve it for you before you even know there's a problem, or there might be a tool off the shelf that we've open sourced that you can grab it and pull it. Something that probably works for Facebook, probably works for smaller companies, but not the other way around. So something that works for a company that's two or three people in their basement programming an app, it's probably not going to work for Facebook, but our systems will likely work for them. Now, whether they should use it or need to use it enough is another story. Okay, so we're all release engineers here. So let's talk about mobile release engineering and the state of it. It makes me want to cry. It's not great right now. And I think for three reasons, I'm only going to talk about two of them here. Number one, mobile is inherently hostile. So if you just use mobile, if you don't actually touch mobile day to day, you may not understand this, and it might be kind of interesting for you. Number two, no control of distribution. The OS vendors, Google and Apple control distribution. Turns out for a release engineer, this is very, very, very important, and actually a large part of our jobs is figuring out the best way to distribute and ship stuff. And a lot of that, our hands are tied behind our back. And then finally, the one I'm not going to talk about because I don't really have time, but feel free to talk to me after, talking about tools themselves, build tools, that sort of thing, supporting tools that just once you get to millions of users or hundreds of developers just completely start falling over and stop working. But we've even talked about that before. You can find them online, and I'll talk about them later if you want to chat. Okay, so what do I mean when I say mobile is hostile? This is a screenshot of Facebook's website, and there's an error on this page. Can you see it? Okay, so not really. What happened over here, this chat thing threw a JavaScript exception. We had an exception handler. We caught it. We reported it to our internal systems. And because we did engineering work to make this part of the page not affect newsfeed, the user can go about their day. They can still see stuff that's loaded. They can still click around. They can still interact. It's not that bad of experience when you have a run-of-the-mill bug. But this is what happens on mobile. You get a crash. The complete experience has gone down, and you go to your home screen on mobile. And that's really painful for users. They may lose state if you haven't done extra work to save the state they were on. This is really painful for the company because now they're not using the app, and maybe they'll forget and just tap on another app. So the stakes are higher on mobile. And sure, sometimes not everything is a crash. There may be display glitches or something like that. But because we're dealing with native code, the vast majority of errors show up as the app back at the home screen. In fact, Apple's animation on iOS is supposed to trick you as a user into thinking you accidentally hit the home button when the app crashes. So you go, oh, I don't know. Oh, did that crash or did I hit the home button? And then you tap it again. So mobile is weird because it's resource constrained. So we have this thing called a battery that we have to worry about. And when you're doing web development or backend stuff, you don't really care about a battery. I don't even think there's APIs on the web to know, is your laptop plugged in to power or is it 5% left? I don't think there is. I don't know. For power in the data center, you probably only care about it at the data center level or efficiency level. I don't think when you do AWS, you as an application programmer are looking to optimize AWS's machine's power. Like I don't think you're trying to do that. CPU, these smartphones, especially the modern ones, are really, really fast and really great, but compared to our laptops, are not as fast and great. And again, when you're doing web development, there's some bar where if you have really tight JavaScript loops and stuff like that, it'll be chunky and you need to fix it, but most people aren't trying to tweak and optimize the very last CPU they can get out of their JavaScript. That's kind of the browser vendors. Big companies like Google, Amazon, Facebook do this, but the vast majority of people do kind of a good enough, it works and is responsive on my machine, so there we go. And then network, you know, on web, you never know if they're accessing it via Ethernet. Other than their speed, via Ethernet, Wi-Fi, you don't really have 2G speeds on desktop, and mobile has this annoying tendency to go in and out of internet and in and out of capabilities, 2G, 3G, Wi-Fi. And then finally, I think one of the hardest part is on web or even backend systems, a lot of them don't have state. So you have one place for state and the server kind of pushes state to the client and everything's good. So you even see this with big web applications, even if you are playing around with it and as long as you hit reload, it throws all the current state out of the way, reloads all the state again. And mobile apps aren't like that. So now you have split brain. You have state in the cloud and state locally, and you have to reconcile that. And that is a much harder engineering problem than throwing away state and just trusting the server again. So that's some sort of stuff that's about mobile in general. That's going to happen regardless of whose operating system, what phones are out there. But there's also stuff dealing with the reality of now. So this is an old graph of Android fragmentation. Each block is a different device model, and they're grouped by manufacturer. So this isn't ours. This was online. I just pulled this. No, like, Facebook crazy data or anything. And yeah, there's just turns out there's a lot of phone manufacturers. There's a lot of models out there. And as a mobile developer and a mobile release engineer, you need to deal with this. The browsers kind of hide this from you on the web. And of course, if you're in the backend services, probably most of your machines are very similar, or you're actively working to make them similar. We can't go buy everyone all the same phone. Like, this is just a reality we have to deal with. Similarly, on the operating systems, there are a bunch of old versions out there in use by millions of people. The browsers have done great work, pioneered by Chrome, to do auto updates to make it so you don't have to deal with old versions. Even Microsoft has been picking that up with IE and shipping IE faster and faster. On mobile, it's an operating system, and you get these pie charts that don't look great. So on iOS 8 is the latest iOS version. There's only 52% of devices on that. So we can't use new iOS 8 only hotness because we still care about the 43%. Similarly, on Android, KitKat is the latest. Well, Elle just got released, so it's a little outdated. And that's 30%. And you'll notice Gingerbread, which again I think was released in 2010, it used to be about 20%. It is now 10% and growing smaller. That's great. But that's percentage. The absolute number of users running 2010 operating system is growing. So they are still selling Gingerbread phones around the world, and people are still activating it and turning them on. So the absolute numbers is growing. So this is going to be a going concern for a while. And that is why mobile itself is pretty painful. So let's talk about no control of distribution. I should put an asterisk. These people control distribution. So if you're at either of these companies, this is not a concern for you on mobile. Not many of us are at these companies here. So these guys set the rules, pretty much, and they get to choose themselves if they follow it or not, which is rather interesting and makes these weird dynamics in that when they feel pain against the rule, they can push through it, and they're not incentivized to change the rules. All right, so what does this mean in practice? Let's go through My Cool App 1.0 from start to shipping, because apps are all the rage. So on Android, this is pretty easy. You go download some open source software, you generate your own key, and you can start developing and start testing on your own phone. That is really great. On iOS, you pay $100 to Apple. It's like, it's $100, not a huge deal. You download Xcode, and you start. But now you want to test it on your phone. You can't actually take your code and run it on the phone. Yes, your own code cannot run on your own phone without going to an Apple web system and dealing with provisioning profiles. So iOS provisioning profiles, for those who don't know it, it's basically a big text file of list of device IDs, list of cert IDs, a list of apps, and stuff like that. And so this is basically your golden ticket to say, okay, I'm building this app for this device, and I'm this user, and then the phone goes, okay, I will let you install it on the phone. Why does this exist? This exists because Apple is trying to control distribution. So they want everything to go through their app store. But they also want developers developing for their platform and testing on their phones, so they gotta poke a hole in the walled garden and let you build something and install it on your phone. But they only want that. They don't want you to be able to take that and then give it to 1,000 people or 10,000 people or sell it. They don't want that. So they came up with this big convoluted system, provisioning profiles that you have to deal with basically to get your code on your own phone and not circumvent the App Store. And that, as a release engineer, for me, is a tough pill to swallow. It makes me do a bunch more work. Okay, that's all right. Like, I've shipped on a bunch of platforms before. I'll just do a bunch more work. I'll automate this stuff. But they don't have an API for this. So it is literally a web tool that works 70% of the time that you have to click around on buttons for. So we have people pressing on buttons. And at Facebook scale, this starts to fall down. Sure, you have one or two engineers or you're doing your own thing. That's fine. Facebook scale, we get a whole batch of interns coming in. They're, oh yeah, I want to do iOS development. Now we have to go through and add like a couple hundred people here, their devices. Oh, and by the way, Apple limits the number of devices and the number of developers. So that's really painful, and that was actually becoming someone's almost full-time job, and they were hating life. And somehow a lot of it fell onto Relinge, which was like, this is my job. I help people ship. I do engineering. I don't touch Apple's web system. That's strange. So we automated it with WebDriver. It's dirty, right? Like pressing on buttons. It's brittle. It's horrible. That's why we built APIs. But in mobile, you got to do what you got to do. And sometimes you got to get your Relinge sensibilities and just get the job done. So we babysit these WebDriver jobs a lot. It's a little bit of work, but it at least keeps us from doing the manual work and wanting to jump out a window. All right, so let's go back to my cool app. We got our provisioning profile stuff on iOS. On Android, we're good. We're developing. We're putting on our own phone. It looks great. But now we want to make sure we want some feedback. We want to give it to a friend. We want to give it to maybe 10 employees or something like that. How do we do that? On Android, you can actually just take that thing you built locally, pop it up on a web server, and people can download that. Now, they can't directly download it. They have to go on their phone, check a box that says unknown sources. We can't prompt them to do it because there's no API to point them straight to that. And they get a big scary warning that says, oh, your phone may blow up. You don't want to do this. You don't want to do this. But people can do it, and once they do it, they can install your thing off your website and try it. So motivated testers can do it. The option is there. There's no technical limitation, and that's great. And that's how the state of the world was a year and a half ago, I want to say. And then Google came along and added alpha and beta testing support to Google Play. So Google Play natively supports pre-release, pre-1.0 and pre-post-1.0 releases, alpha and beta testing. And at Facebook, we live and die by alpha and beta testing. That scale we were talking about, there's no way we can automate test and dog food it internally. So we reach out to alpha and beta testers. So this is a screenshot of our Google Play management console. You can see we have lots and lots of packages in production, lots of packages in alpha. The UI, I think, was screwing up because we have lots of packages in beta as well. The good part about being Facebook, I guess, is we have over 50,000 alpha testers testing our code every night. That's really nice and gives us a nice feedback loop. And in beta, we have over 1 million people testing it in over 150 countries. So we're sort of blessed that we stick this thing out in the world. We say, hey, it's the crashiest thing ever. It's not ready for release. And people go, sign me up. I want that stuff. And the good thing about this, it has an API. So Google recently built an API. We actually used WebDriver to automate it before they did the API. But this is pretty rare in mobile because this is most mobile platforms are like for the one person in their garage working on their app that they think is going to make them a millionaire or something like that. And that's what the platforms are geared towards because that's where the most people are doing it. So we're really excited that Google built an API and we can just tie it to our CI system. So every night, the builds off master go, is it green? And ships it to alpha, ships it to 50,000 external testers, and then we get bugs and stuff back. So no human involved, really great. This is simple Relinge stuff, right? But this is like mind-blowing on mobile. Okay, so how do you alpha and beta test on iOS? Oh, lovely. Well, they have this thing called ad hoc signing. So you can locally sign something for someone's particular phone and give them the package. Really painful, a lot of manual transaction stuff. It's so bad, there's a lot of startups that have basically exist just to make this nicer. And you're limited to 100 testers, where, I don't know about you, 100 testers seems really low. Maybe I could get 100 testers for my own thing, I don't know, but I'm pretty optimistic, so I'd be thinking I'd have more than that, and it sucks it's this weird arbitrary limitation. So it's not really going to work. And then for Facebook, it obviously doesn't work. We have 8,000 employees. We want them actually testing this stuff. So 100 versus 8,000 is a little different. So Apple recognized this, and they came up with this other thing called the iOS Developer Enterprise Program. So this is another key. You go to their little website, and get it in. Again, you have to do it manually. And then once you have that key, you can sign iPhone apps that can run on anyone's phone. no number limitations. So that's great. We have our automation that builds and signs it, puts it up into our web page where you can download it, sends out automatic updates to our apps, and it's all nice and automated. And we can test it with 8,000 employees at Facebook. But we want to test externally too. We know 8,000 employees at Facebook, you know, we have a lot of users in Indonesia, in Africa, and we know we're not testing the same conditions as them. So can we use this to ship externally? This is everywhere Apple says in-house or employees on the screen. So remember, they want to control distribution. So there's no limit on this. And the way they limit it is they make a legal thing saying you cannot ship these builds outside of your organization. Because again, then you could ship to 1,000 people externally. You could have people buy it, and Apple wouldn't get their 30% cut. So this is all about control. That sucks. So what do we do? Well, Apple and iOS 8 recently came up with a public program for public alpha and beta testers. It's called TestFlight. They actually bought a company, one of the companies that was making their stuff actually sane. And yeah, so it shipped in iOS 8. And it is a piece of crap. I love the poop emoji. It's just great. Number one, review, App Store review is still required. For alpha and beta apps, Apple wants to review them before you're testing them with a small portion of testers. That is just crazy and crap. The App Store rules are still enforced. So while they're reviewing your beta app or your alpha app, a thing you may not even ship, maybe you're iterating, getting feedback from users, they're sitting there like hovering over you going, are you doing something wrong yet? Are you doing something wrong? Yep, cool, you can't test it. So that's pretty weird. And I think that's bad too. And then finally, the worst is they're like, oh yeah, we're going to give you external testers. You get 1,000. Like, what the hell is this shit, right? Like, Apple does not themselves test with only 1,000 external testers when they ship iOS betas or Xcode betas. So this is, oh, we need something different, but they won't let us do something different. And it's not just us, it's all of you guys too. So sure, if you're an individual developer, 1,000 testers might sound a lot. You might not even have 1,000 people using your app. But maybe one day you will, and then you'll hit this limit. So it's just really crap, quite frankly. And then, of course, it's Apple. So there's no API. We thought about, maybe we'll use it at Facebook to just get a little bit more. But then there's no API. So we're like, all our enterprise internal stuff's all automated and nice. Why would we do extra manual work for 1,000 more testers? That's an eighth of number of employees. We're not getting much benefit. So we think it's crap, and we're not going to use it, and we're pushing on them. It was quite honestly a pathetic first attempt. So anyway, going back to my app 1.0, we have built it locally, tested it locally. We have done alpha and beta testings externally using Google stuff or using Apple's limited 1,000 tester stuff. And now it comes time to ship it. Actually, to give it to Apple or Google to ship for us. And so what do we do there? On Google, it's pretty easy. The same API they built for alpha and beta also works for production. So it's really nice. We can write tools on top that check to make sure you have the right icon. We've shipped the wrong icon twice. You know, you have tools that can check before you ship, is everything good, and you don't have a human in the loop, and that's really great. On iOS, you literally load this web page and upload your little screenshots and release notes and all that sort of stuff by hand. And this is really annoying because you have to do it for all the languages. Facebook's available in a lot of languages. So you're sitting there copying and pasting, reloading the page, making sure you got the right one in there. And it's extremely soul draining. And then when that's all done, you press a button that says, cool, now I want to upload my binary, my actual code. And then you have to switch out of the web browser into a native app on your Mac, only runs on a Mac. And basically, this lets you just choose the zip file to upload. Why it's not all done in the web, I have no clue, but that's the way they do it. All manual, of course, which wouldn't be a big deal if you're shipping every couple months, if you have one app or something like that. But at a company like Facebook, when, like I said, we have over 10 apps and we ship every 2 weeks, that starts to become a drag. So we could do WebDriver. We really don't want to do WebDriver. That seems to be the tool we have to keep on dragging. But you also notice, and I'm not suggesting you do this, but you'll notice that this application loader, this native Mac app, it's got to talk to something, right? It runs on your laptop. It's got to talk to something. So you might be able to, you know, see what it does and maybe pretend to be it. Yeah, so there's probably an API there. Who knows why Apple doesn't open it up? Similarly, uploading all these screenshots, all this other stuff in the release notes is really, really annoying. And it turns out that the Apple App Store started out as the music store. And they don't expect their music publishers to manually go for every song on every album, upload album art, who wrote it, all that sort of stuff. There's just too many songs. It would just take too long. So it turns out Apple has a tool for these music publishers that can also work for app publishers, and it's called ITMS Transporter. And it is like a Java jar you run locally on your Mac, and it uploads stuff for you. That uses an API too, yet they still don't open source it. So they have APIs available, they're not letting other people use them, and then they create manual tools that people are supposed to use on top. And this is the state of mobile release engineering. Okay, so we've got our binaries in Google Play and in Apple Store. Now it's time to ship, right? Nope. On iOS, you have App Review. Android, you do not have App Store Review. So you could literally put something in press go. You could say it's Facebook's newest app, and it's not from Facebook, and Google let it go. On Apple, you have to go through App Store Review. So a human at Apple's on Apple's side has to go look at your code and say, yes, it's good to ship, or we want it in the store. That's kind of insane and kind of archaic. They have all these rules in the App Store. If you've never heard of them, I've never seen them, I'd suggest taking a look. They're actually pretty approachable and readable. One of them is apps that crash will be rejected. Pretty much all apps crash, right? But so if the reviewer hits an app crash, that's maybe a 1 in a million, or maybe something specific about their account, or maybe you forgot to flip a switch for just them, they are perfectly in their right to just say, nope, I know you want to ship this, I know it's important for you or for your business, but sorry. Here's another one. Apps that exhibit bugs will be rejected. They're like so broad and so crazy, you're just like, you just kind of shrug your shoulders, and when you roll the dice, you're like, is it going to get through? Is it going to not? I don't really know. And then even if you hit this mythical bar, they have this legalese at the bottom of it, and they have the right to reject for any reason. So they're like, even if you do everything we want you to do, if we feel like you're competing with us, or if we don't like this, or whatever, it's perfectly in their right to do it. One concrete example from Facebook is, one of the things is, you cannot mention competing platforms anywhere in the app. You can't mention, if you're on iOS, you cannot mention Android or Windows Phone or anything. So obviously, it's an iOS app. Why would we mention Android? The reviewer went to our help center, which is a web view in our app because the help content changes very quickly, went through our help center, went to search and type Android, and got articles back and rejected us because of that. And for some reason, people think that Facebook doesn't have to go through App Store Review, but I think we have more scrutiny than probably most other people. Yes, this is the joys of being a release engineer on mobile. Okay, but we think My App 1.0 is going to make us rich, and it's going to be great and going to be perfect. So we've got in the App Store, we went through Apple's bullshit, and we're just ready to press the button. But we should make sure, you know, we want to ship it everywhere. We don't want to just ship it to the US or something. So let's load it in Google Play. And we look and we go, okay, this application is free. That's what I want. And I'm going to select all countries. I want it in all countries. We're good, right? We're shipping everywhere, right? Let me tell you a story. Does anyone know what this flag is? All right, this is for the Congo. So I got a report. Someone sent me an email. It's like, hey, Christian, Facebook for Android is not available in the Congo. And I'm like, that's really weird because we have it as free and we have it as everywhere. So it must be a Google bug. So we talk to Google, we go back and forth, doesn't look like there's a bug. I'm like, okay, maybe something's going on, and these are fuzzy reports, they're not automated reports. So and finally a carrier gets a hold of me and goes, no, like, this is true, here's a phone. So we're like, okay, so we scour through all this stuff. And we go, and we notice, we scroll down past all the list of 135 countries, and then there's this rest of the world at the bottom that is crossed out, disabled, and not checked. And then there's a learn more, which is like not helpful at all. We're like, what the hell? Like, what is going on here? And then if you go a couple frequently asked questions, go through like a chain of them, there's this comment that says, please note, applications with in-app purchases fall under paid category. Even though the UI will reflect free and everywhere, it only ships to places where Google has a can take payments, even if you don't. Anyway, so we're like, wait, Facebook for Android doesn't have in-app purchases. Why is this happening? We think this is what's happening, but why is this happening? And it turns out someone at Facebook who had access to the Google Play account accidentally turned on in-app purchases. And so then suddenly we just were not available in Congo and a bunch of other places. And we tried to figure out who it was, but there's no audit log in Google Play. So that was pretty brutal. So we went through and basically removed everyone except for me and one other person as a release engineer there. And this is the sort of stuff you have to deal with. On mobile, there's all these landmines that you just don't know are there until you trip over them. And it's really frustrating for a release engineer because you're constantly on the defensive. You're constantly figuring stuff out. There's all this tribal knowledge. And then mobile's moving so quickly that you try to pass this tribal knowledge around, and then by the time people get it, that maybe it's not true anymore. But we want to ship my app. And we're ready. We've checked all those boxes. We're about ready to go live. But we're still a little worried. We've invested a lot into this. We want to make a big splash. We want to get on TechCrunch. And we're release engineers. We know how to ship something the first time with high quality. And what do? Well, you canary it, right? Like, you ship to a percentage of people. You don't ship to everyone. You don't go 0 to 100. This is like standard RHEL-eng stuff. And on Google Play, we can do this. You can ship to, you can go, oh, when you're going to production, only go to 0.5% or 5% and ratchet it up as you find problems and fix them. On iOS, they don't have that. It goes 0 to 100%. And you're only limited by how fast Apple's CDN can vend out the package. Apple actually literally describes this to us as a torpedo. It's like once your app goes out, it goes in one direction and it can't come back and they can't stop it. So it's really strange in that you ship this thing, you go, yeah, and all these bugs start happening. You get let's say you shipped a bad bug and you're getting bad reviews and you get people saying, oh, they want their money back or whatever. And you have, oh, this is the worst company or worst app I've ever seen. And you want to stop the bleeding. Well, on Android, you can, stop it at 5%, fix it, roll it out, probably not a big deal. On iOS, every second that you're investigating that problem, there are more and more people being affected by it, and you're getting hurt more and more and more. So you scramble, you find the bug, you're like, oh my God, I can't believe that. I hit that as such an edge case. I could never have tested it. And so you upload it to the App Store. You have to go through a review again. You have to have a human on Apple's side actually press yes. And there is a way to say this is to fix a problem, there's no new features, but there's no real SLA there. So you could, your company could be cratering. You could be losing money every second. People could stop running your app, and you have to wait for someone at one infinite loop to get off their butt and go press a button and say, yeah, this person can ship. And Apple also has really loose holidays, so if you're around a US holiday, good luck. Okay, so finally you go through it. A couple days later, some guy gets off his butt and presses, yes, okay, they can update. They can ship their hotfix. Can you imagine that? Yeah, this person can ship their hotfix. So you do it. And you do it on Android too, and you don't have a human involved on Android. So that's great. So what happens? So everyone, it rolls out. Everyone gets a new version. You can move on, start working on your version 2.0 to give them all new features to keep them all interested. No. This is what happens when you ship your hotfix. People keep on using the old version, and then they just get a little badge that says, hey, there's an update. And on Android, this is more of a notification. It's not a badge, but this is on iOS. So on mobile, we have reverted. We figured this out. Chrome pioneered it, I think, and then Firefox took it over we should just silently update in the background, and then people should always just be on the latest stuff. It's better for users. They get performance improvements. They get features. They get security fixes, and better for developers because you have to keep less in your head, and when you do screw up, it goes out to the world. Can you imagine what it would be like every time you load Facebook.com or any other web page that it popped up a dialogue and was like, do you want to use the Facebook from yesterday? And the default is yes. That would be so weird. The way you ship on web would fundamentally change. And that's the way it is on mobile. And so InfoSec, Taylor Swift, agrees with me. It turns out updates are kind of just bullshit and are for tech people. So if you want to be in control, you want to do manual updates, you want to stay in an old version, you are a tech person. Your grandma does not know and does not care. And somehow, both Apple and Google reverted back to the progress we made in the last 4 or 5 years and decided that updates were by default manual. So now they do have a way to do automatic updating, but it's buried in settings. You have to check it. There's no way for me as an app developer to go to check it and go, hey, you don't have automatic updates going on. Like, you should do this for a better experience. There's no way for us to do that because those APIs are not available. So not having automatic updates, what does that mean? I mean, that sucks for Relaunch. We've got to deal with old versions, all this bullshit. But what does it actually mean for the user and for the company? Well, it means this, permanence. It means every bit on mobile you ship out there will be out there forever. This is a graph of Facebook for Android usage. Each color is a different release. You can see none of these colors go to zero. There are still people running Facebook for Android 1.0 today, like actively launching it and actively using it. We don't know how it works. Like, it's probably broken, but there are still people doing it. And as a release engineer, this should be like very, very scary for you, because you'll notice that by the time over here we were shipping, less than 50% of people ever even got the new version. They were on old builds. And this is directly responsible because Apple and Google did not do auto updates by default. And this makes our life a living hell. This also means that when you change server side, if you break old clients, because, oh, the old clients are old news, right? I don't know. I don't have that on my phone, and I don't want the N-way test everything against everything. You break old clients, it's now material to the business, right? It's now 50% of. So we've done a bunch of work to make this better, but I'm bitter. Like, we shouldn't have had to do that work. It should have just been, they just should have flipped a boolean. So one of the things we did stuff like, if you're running a super old version, we'll just lock you out. I'm just like, sorry, this is, you know, 6 months old. Go use the mobile website. It's a better experience at this point than you having an old, slow, outdated, maybe insecure app. And that's a horrible user experience, and we didn't want to build that, but we pretty much had to. And then we also did this thing. We're like, look, okay, people will go to Google Play, and they will get our app. But then once our code's running on the phone, like, we should be able to just keep ourselves updated, right? So we went out, and we built this thing. And it looked prettier than this when it actually shipped. And we built this thing. It's like, okay, you have Facebook. We can hit our servers and go, are you running the latest? If you're not running the latest, we can go, okay, we can download in the background for you. And then say, do you want to install it? We can't actually trigger the install automatically. That black stuff on the left is the OS level thing. You can't bypass that, and the user has to actually click install. But we can tee it all up for them and make it really nice and really smooth. And so we built that. We built that in like, I don't know, 2 months, 3 months. Relaunch built it. You know, where we do just as much development as release engineering. So we built it, and what happened? Google got angry. And they did this paragraph of legalese in the Google Play agreement. An app downloaded from Google Play may not modify, replace, or update its own APK binary code using any other method other than Google Play's update mechanism. So with this one paragraph of legalese, Google prevented us from auto-updating people, as well as made 2 to 3 months work of our team basically mean nothing, which is sad. And we could have maybe not accepted this, but that would mean not updating the app in Google Play ever again, which is not great. So on mobile, basically, both Google and Apple, there's always this axe hanging over your head. There's always this, at the end of the day, if you do something wrong or something that's against people or something like that, that they're like, that's cool, do what you want, it's all good. But you want to be in the App Store? You got a nice business that kind of relies on the App Store? Yeah, you should probably get in line. So when we built that auto updater, it was not against any terms of service in the store at all. Zero. And then once we built it, the terms of service changed. And this happens with Apple as well. It's not just Google. But this sort of stuff really makes it hard to be a release engineer, because it is no longer a matter of engineering and talent and you know, maybe even money for machines and stuff like that. There's this political component of it, which is not great. So anyway, that's about all I have. Here's my contact information. I stole this from another slide. So these are some tools we've open sourced if you're interested in kind of mobile tooling stuff. I'm happy to talk about those, but that's about all I have now, and I don't know how we're doing timing.
4 minutes.
4 minutes for any question or anything. Yep.
Only kind of trolling, but how are you not all low-functioning alcoholics?
Yeah, the question was, how are we not low-functioning alcoholics? Because we are high-functioning alcoholics. No, I mean, quite honestly, we are very concerned about mobile release engineer burnout, because it's like stuff's coming at you at all times. It's just not something you can put get a hold of, and this is a state we got to live in, and so you know, it's not like you can ignore mobile. Mobile is, like we said, eating the world. So yeah.
So this is freaking insanity.
Yes.
Why? And I know you guys tried to do like a web view or full web approach.
Yes.
Years back. Why haven't you just burnt the existing apps with fire and gone full web?
The question was, why haven't we gone just full web and not kind of ship native apps through the App Store? We kind of go where the users are, and they like to find stuff in the App Store. Mark Zuckerberg has explained this a lot better. We actually are really big. Our mobile website has a ton of usage. So we are big with mobile websites too. There's just a percentage of people that want native experiences. You know, there's a lot more. Right now, the speed is there. And I'm gonna butcher this horribly, but Mark Zuckerberg has a bunch of comments, because the web people were very bitter when we did our rewrite into native code. And so he has a lot more eloquent things. But basically, it's the market demands it. Yeah. Yes?
What about Windows Phone?
we ship on Windows Phone. We ship on Windows Phone. That's about all I... Windows Phone is actually really nice, because they have pretty much all the features that... The store has pretty much all the features that Google Play has, plus more. So them being a distant third is really great, because they now have to compete on features, not market position. And so it's actually pretty great to work with, surprisingly. But Mindshare is just not there. Cool. All right. Thank you guys very much.